afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Sports Inquirer podcast. This is your host, E. Marcel Portooth. I hope to have a good show for you today. First, let's take care of some housekeeping business. We have some sponsors. First sponsor is the sportsinquirer.net, the premier site for website for the news and notes in the world of sports. Also, the host of this fabulous podcast. And the good part is, actually, we turn that up. There we go. A good part about the website this week is going to be some new written content. I know some of you out there have been looking to get some more written posts on the blog, and the good news is there's going to be some good content on there. We're going to have a review of the NBA season, the regular season at least, and our award winners. Also, we may do a Major League Baseball power ranking, and definitely by the end of the week, probably post on Thursday, there is going to be a preview of the latest UFC on Fox event that's taking place this Saturday. So look forward to reading some of those articles. And of course, you go to the site for all the news and notes in the world of sports. Also announcing that we are actually going to develop a partnership with another website, thestartinglineup.net. It is an excellent website based out of Chicago, Illinois, and it's going to be a Chicago sports focus. And the good news is I'm actually going to be doing some writing for them as well and providing some content for the site. So we're going to have some links on sportsinquirer.net as well, so you can head over to the site. But if you just want to go there and listen to some archived shows that have been recorded over the past few weeks, that website is thestartinglineup.net. And I also want to thank all of you out there for increasing our listenership. We've doubled our listenership in 1 month's time. So I've been doing a good job, all of you who have been listening, to speaking to your friends and family and going on to all of our social media websites and really encouraging the dialogue. So greatly appreciate that on a personal level. And if you want to head over to our website, once again, it's thesportsinquirer.net. Has archives of all of the previous podcasts as well as some written content. Also, you can head to, we're on Twitter, and under the name sportsinquirer, all one word, no underscores, no dashes or hyphens. And you can also send us an email at sportsinquirer@gmail.com. And finally, one last note, you can subscribe to us on iTunes under The Sports Inquirer. Just do a search there on your iTunes store and look up our podcast, and you can subscribe to us. And from there, every time I do a new episode or new audio content is posted on our site, it automatically goes to iTunes and under the podcast section. So whenever you update your podcast, whichever ones you listen to, including ours, if you subscribe to it, you automatically get our most up-to-date episode. It's a really good service that I use for a lot of my fellow podcast tasters and other shows that I listen to. So look forward to having a really good show today. We're going to talk, review the Masters probably within the first 15 minutes. And probably around the 17-minute mark of the podcast, I am going to review the UFC on FX event that just took place, the Ultimate Fighter finale. That took place on Saturday in Las Vegas. So we're going to talk about that for a while. Around the 32-minute mark, I'm going to go to Major League Baseball. A lot of news and notes, especially locally here in Atlanta. A lot of good activities with the Braves and really some interesting contrast in teams that are doing better than expected and maybe worse than expected and everything in between. So we're going to try to get to as many notes as we can there all around the world of baseball, because I know all of you fans are throughout the nation. So I'm going to try to hit different pockets for you. And finally, if you're new to the show, we have a section called What's Ruffling My Feathers. I couldn't use Grind My Gears. That was copyrighted. So I'm going to talk about what ruffled my feathers since the last time we spoke. And it's going to relate to something we can all relate to and understand, Uncle Sam and those taxes. So I have a really good take on paying taxes and how others are reacting to people paying their taxes and everything in between. So we're going to take a quick break. Looking forward to really speaking with you. And when we come back, we are going to review the past, present, and future of the Masters here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. And also, before I continue, want to send my best wishes and hopes that everything goes well, or as far as the bombs or the explosions that took place at the end of the Boston Marathon. Obviously, this being a sports podcast and relating to a sporting event, I just hope all goes well. It's too early to make commentary or analysis of it. We will address the situation probably in the next recorded podcast that'll be out on Wednesday. But before I continue, I wanted to send it out there because a lot of you are going to listen to this. By the time I conclude this and finish the recording, there'll be something more news on that. But I just want to acknowledge that the existence of it, and hopefully things can go as best as possible in that tough situation. All right, so moving on to the Masters, which took place this past weekend here in Georgia, a little bit south of us in Augusta from Atlanta. The reason I labeled it the past, the present, and the future is I saw all three of those in full form over the weekend. Now, as I've talked about in my previous podcast, when it comes to golf knowledge, I really only focus on the majors. So it's interesting to actually sit back and watch the final round or two when it comes to the Open Championship or the U.S. Open Tour Championship and so forth. And Masters obviously has its own allure, especially on a Sunday. Now, the past, I'm looking at Tiger Woods. As I said, as far as my golf knowledge, it may be minimalized in comparison to others, and if you have any comments on it, please go to those different social media forums that I discussed earlier. I understand the rule that was broken as far as the ball drop and everything like that, and he signed technically incorrect scorecard, I guess, in relation to the rules violation. The part that I didn't understand or I didn't like were two things. One, I didn't like the aspect of someone watching on television and calling into a hotline to report someone that of a broken rule. I know that golf may have its different standards of officiating, and the golfers judge themselves and keep track of their own amount of shots, and whoever you're paired up with, they keep track of it as well. However, I think of something of Masters caliber, probably the most significant and known tournament in all of sports, on the golf side of things, I don't understand where you don't have officials there to actually look at all of these activities. This isn't like it took place during a less known open or a smaller tour. This is the Masters, and there should have been an official there before Woods even took his next shot to indicate that he incorrectly dropped the ball and he needed to redrop it or do something like that. He was assessed a 2-shot penalty, which in the end really hurt him in causing some lower positions. But as I said, I don't understand why there were not officials there tracking every pairing of the event. The Masters could afford it. The PGA Tour definitely has the budget to have that happen. And the second thing I did not like about it is I did not like different golfers like David Duval and Nick Faldo and some others calling for Woods to withdraw or disqualify himself. I thought that was a really low blow for them to do that as fellow professionals. Usually when something that like happens in a negative way for an athlete, usually the fellow athletes are there to defend them. Usually it's media types like myself or fans who are calling for things like suspensions and firings and everything like that. It's usually the other professional athletes in that same sport that will defend their own. I guess that just shows the individual nature of professional golf. And then furthermore, I don't see, or I don't believe that a Nick Faldo or David Duval or some others would withdraw themselves from the tournament. You know darn well, if they had the chance to win a Masters Championship, there would be no way that they would resign and give up that opportunity. So I did not like the professional snitching and the professional, I don't know if it's stabbing in the back. It's not that critical, I don't think, as far as insulting a man's pride. But I think the other golfer should have stayed out of it and let the rule keepers and the officials handle what should have been done, because they know that they would have not done those same steps. But overall, for Woods, he came in as an overwhelming favorite. Cover of Sports Illustrated stating that he was back. He still finished in the top 5, and for many golfers, that would be a career moment for them to finish top five in the Masters. But obviously, the standards for Woods is incredibly high. Still is a few majors away from reaching Jack Nicklaus's record. As I said, I don't know if he's going to reach that in the near future, but I'm glad to see that he's at least in contention. And that's why I was surprised also that the fellow golfers talk bad about Woods, because when he does well, they all do well. When Woods is in contention, he makes money for everybody, including the fellow golfers, and gains interest in the sport overall. I'm not to say that he should be a don or is bulletproof and avoidable of criticism, but I just thought that the fellow golfers would have not gone that route. And I look at the present, Adam Scott. I've talked about the Masters, haven't even mentioned the winner, Adam Scott, with an outstanding final few holes to win the playoff against Angel Cabrera and get his first major title and win the first championship or first Masters championship for an Australian ever at the Masters. First, let's talk about Scott overall. Incredible performance for him. The 18th hole, that clutch putt that should have been for the win, I thought showed a lot of guts, a lot of honor for him to get that. You heard him yelling, "Let's go, Aussie." Obviously, he was representing his country well. Cabrera showed some stones as well, definitely, especially with that chip shot to get to 18, and obviously the putt to make it go into the playoff holes. Cabrera had several opportunities to really win the championship, or win the Masters, especially in that playoff hole where he missed the putt probably by 2-3 inches. It was that close. And if he makes that, he's probably winning another major championship, another Masters title for him. But obviously respect goes to Adam Scott for getting the win. And as I said, going back, it's the first ever win for an Australian at the Masters in history. And obviously when you think of the Masters in Australia, and you go back to Greg Norman back in 1997 when he blew the several strokes lead against Nick Faldo in the final round. I remember watching that back in New York, and while my sports knowledge was not as much as it is now, I knew something bad was happening, and even heard the whispers from the commentators that this is not unusual for Norman to blow majors. So I thought it was really good for the country, and Adam Scott showed some love to Norman, acknowledging that he was a major influence in his professional career. And hearing Greg Norman on the Golf Channel talking about his thoughts on the championship for Adam Scott was really great as well. And the thing I noticed also looking at the future of golf, and as I said, this is my first time really taking a seat and watching a golf tournament in a while, about a year or two, and really analyzing what's going on. It looks like the international game of golf, or the international golfers, are stronger than ever. Obviously, Adam Scott, he won his championship. Rory McIlroy has won, run several majors. He's on a path of being the number one golfer in the world. And then even the young amateur, the 14-year-old, Yuan Tieling, who actually made the cut. Now, at 14 years old, I was barely able to run up and down a court consistently for my JV basketball team, let alone compete on the biggest stage in the world for his sport. And he made the cut, and despite having that shot penalty, or I guess for slow play, which would have devastated a lot of professionals, it caused them to have a terrible rest of the weekend as far as their golf goes. And that young man really had an excellent run, youngest amateur ever to even play in a tournament and then make the cut. The future is bright for him. And I think the future is bright for international golf. And I think it's always good to have international presence in every sport. I know that golf is, obviously golf is very sport-based in the United States, and definitely have to respect the presence of golf in Great Britain. Obviously, the start of golf was there. But I like having the different countrymen represented in the sport. I think it grows the brand of the game overall. And while I was honestly watching the Masters more for Tiger Woods and to see what he would do over the weekend, I'm glad that I learned about some other players as well. And I'm looking forward to following the Open Championship, and as I said, throughout the rest of the golf season. So those are my thoughts on the Masters and everything that took place there. We're going to take a break here, and when I come back, I am going to talk about Major League Baseball. Oh, and one last thing. I had a moment of Commodore pride, too, for all of my Vandy fans out there. Brett Snedeker had a really good run. Came into the final round, tied for the lead with Cabrera. did not have the best final round of the Masters, but still had a respectable finish. Obviously, he's had a good run to Tour Championship last year. Got the FedEx Cup. So he has become one of the top five golfers in the world. And it's always good to see a Commodore in a high point for professional sports. So all of you Vandy fans, I needed to say that before we continued. All right, so we're going to take a break, another break here. And when I come back, I'm going to review the events that took place at UFC on FX on Saturday in Las Vegas here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. It was a good weekend here in Atlanta for me personally. In between watching some good Kennesaw State baseball and had a good series against Jacksonville, able to get out in the sunlight and enjoy. Anytime you enjoy baseball on a sunny day is always a good time. And doing some gardening as well. I did my rants on how I don't like yard work and it still stands, but had to do some work at the house and that was exciting. In between all that stuff, I was actually able to watch some UFC on FX and the Ultimate Fighter finale. And the Ultimate Fighter is always an interesting case for me because while I do enjoy my reality television, and I'll talk for hours about Real Worlds and Royal Road Rules Challenge and even some VH1 shows and everything like that. Reality TV is probably my guilty pleasure out of everything else. So you know I'm always up for watching any people living in a house and doing any activities. For some reason, Ultimate Fighter, I like to have my separation between sport and reality television. So while I don't watch a lot of the actual the first 45 minutes or so of the show where they showed him training or learning about this guy's background, I usually watch the last 5 or 10 minutes of the show, just see the fights. So I don't really get the full impression of where these guys are coming from in their family lives. But I think overall the show, and we're going to talk about the next season that's coming up and the changes that they're making. I always find the finale when all of they fight for the championship and fight for the 6-figure contract and all the bells and whistles the UFC gives them. As I said, it's always tough to gauge who's going to win the fight because I honestly don't know much about them. But I didn't know about the two guys that participated in the finale, and that was Uriah Hall and Kelvin Gastelum. Now, for those of you really unfamiliar with mixed martial arts and didn't really follow the show, in essence, Uriah Hall had a really big hype train behind him as far as some of the most devastating knockouts that has ever been seen on the show, from spinning wheel kicks to a spinning back fist, even just a straight knockout. By the fist, ending fights within the first 2-3 minutes every time. Physical body, very strong, incredible athleticism. Even guys like Chael Sonnen and respected commentators and fellow fighters were saying he was a contender for the middleweight division. And I was very weary to give him that type of praise because while he had a successful run over his past 2-3 fights, it's always you got to be careful when you give guys that much credit. After only 2-3 fights, and Hall ended up losing in the champion finale to Kelvin Gastelum, and Gastelum used a lot of wrestling and takedowns and really negated the striking of Uriah Hall and earned a victory. Really good win for him and earned the impressive decision. Only 21 years old, the man looks like he could actually fight a weight class down into welterweight personally, but actually looked like he bulked up to get into middleweight just to fight, won the championship, or won the competition, and is now going to move on to bigger and better things. But I thought the fight was well done. It's good that the middleweights are getting some new blood. Out of all of the divisions, if you look at the prospects of the present and the future, probably the weakest one is at middleweight. There's Anderson Silva obviously is the best fighter in the world and has dominated the division for years within the UFC. But I think that if the UFC wants to have a balanced card or a balanced level of fighting for all of their divisions, they really need to bulk up the middleweight division. So I thought it was really good that they actually had middleweights fighting in this past season. And I saw some impressive guys there overall. Travis Brown got an impressive win over Gabriel Gonzaga. Travis Brown is one of those prospects or guys that has the physical talent, and you just want him to make that next step and take it to a higher level to contend in a big way. Impressive win over Gonzaga, who still, at this level, at this time, is an incredibly tough fighter, very skilled, and Brown really dominated him during that entire fight. And it's good that the heavyweight division is getting some depth as well, besides some of the other guys there. The fight of the night to me, and maybe the fight of the year, was the Miesha Tate-Kat Zingano fight. Incredible effort by both women in that division. I thought that I've seen on the message boards and the internet, as far as an early stoppage by the referee on Tate. Personally, I didn't think it was necessarily an early stoppage. Zingano was getting a lot of glide takedowns and taking advantage of her on the ground. And once those knees started flying, Tate was already on shaky ground. And when you saw those knees land consecutive, I think about three or four consecutive knees on Tate, the referee's job is not only to call a clean fight, but also to protect the fighters. And I thought that Tate, who was actually a fan of the blog, and we're fans of her as well, I think that in this situation, that stoppage was fair. I think that Tate was given enough time to recover from it or to respond or defend herself and did not do in so quick in nature. So in the end, that's where you saw the referee do a good job with that stoppage. Now we're going to have Zingano facing Ronda Rousey in the next season of they're going to be opposite coaches in the next season of Ultimate Fighter, which is taking place on Fox Sports 1 starting in September or August or September, one of those months. And we're going to have two divisions, men and women, living together in the same house. So that's where you're starting to see the Ultimate Fighter really taking a page out of Real World and trying to get more of the reality up on the show. I don't know if I really co-sign on that. I'll give it a chance because I'm fans of both fighters, and I'm always interested in mixed martial art activities. But we'll see what happens, and we'll have plenty of time to talk about that when it comes up. And then finally, Uriah Faber got a nice victory. Impressive submission by Rear Naked Choke over Scott Jorgensen. That was a solid fight as well. Faber looked like kind of WEC vintage form of himself. I don't know if he finally adjusted to being at 135 or he just had a good feeling going into the fight. But that's the best he's looked in a really long time. And he's kind of stuck in the bantamweight division at 135. The two top fighters, Dominic Cruz, has been out for close to 2 years now with a knee injury. We don't know when he's coming back. And then also the current champion, Renan Barao. Barao dominated Faber in their last fight. So I don't know who Faber is going to fight in the near future as far as the 135 division. But he's still a major draw, was able to be the main event on another UFC card. Still very popular, popular fighter. So we'll see what happens there. We're going to have a major preview of UFC on Fox. It's taking place this Saturday. And we're going to have, not only are we going to do the written preview, as I said, that's going to be posted on Thursday on thesportsinquirer.net. We'll also do another verbal submission. That's going to be the name of our mixed martial arts segment. And we're going to preview the card there as well. So really good event for UFC on FX. I thought it was well done. Always good to see some new young fighters get a chance. All right, we're going to take another break here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. When I come back, I'm going to review some news and notes in the world of Major League Baseball. obviously, we're in full swing on a Major League Baseball season. A lot of news and notes to go over with you over this past weekend. And really over the past week, first recording of the podcast that I've done since last Tuesday. Lots been going on in the life of the Sports Inquirer, but definitely had to come back on the mic and review everything that's gone on. Major sweep, major three-game series win for the Braves over the Nationals this past weekend. Was able to rush home on Friday night and see the Braves down 6-2 in the bottom of the ninth inning, top of the ninth inning, excuse me, and were able to get two runs, highlighted by a rough throwing error by Zimmerman at third base for the Nationals. Braves are able to take advantage of that, had a big two-run home run in extra innings, and Kimbrel closed it out. I picked the Nationals to win the East, and they still might. They're an excellent team. But this is really reminding me between the Braves and the Nationals of 1993. And interestingly enough, the Braves were also involved in this scenario. If I remember back in 1993, year before the wild card took place, because wild card came back after the strike that ended the 1994 season. But back then, there were only two divisions in each league, and the only teams that advanced to the playoffs were the winners of those said divisions. And back then, the Braves were in the NL West, and the San Francisco Giants obviously were there as well. And those teams competed every day throughout the entire season, going back and forth, holding on to first place. Really the last true pennant race we've had in a traditional sense in baseball. And in the end, the Braves ended up winning 104 games, and the Giants lost 103, which I think may be the most wins ever by a team to not make the playoffs, at least within the past 20, 30 years, I would believe. While I picked both the Braves and the Nationals to make the playoffs, and I think they will pretty easily, but I think they're, especially with the second wild card, they're going to have a really good chance of making that happen. I think all season you're going to see these teams go back and forth. And while the Braves got the sweep at Washington, I have no doubts that the Nationals are going to come down here to Atlanta later in the season and probably win a series here. But the Braves, so much is going well for them. You got to start with Evan Gattis, the janitor, as he's been unofficially nicknamed here in town. Incredibly dope duty of replacing McCann at catcher and even playing some first base as well. The guy was really a last-minute addition even to the roster in spring training. Worked hard and got a spot. And obviously with the preseason injury of Brian McCann, he's recovering from surgery. And then the subsequent DL stint at Freddie Freeman, the incumbent Braves first baseman, and he's been out with an oblique injury. Gattis has really stepped up and arguably been, if it wasn't for Justin Upton, his teammate, maybe the best player in the National League so far. He's been outstanding. Justin Upton, another outstanding weekend, hit some more home runs. When I did my MVP votings, we had Spencer here from Sports Minds of America, and we're going over all of the votes and everything like that. My top five MVPs included guys like Joey Votto and Matt Kemp and a few others. Number five, I had tied Freddie Freeman and Jason Heyward, because I thought that the Braves were going to win a lot of games, and those two guys I think were going to have their best career seasons. And while both of them I think still have chances to do really well, Justin Upton has definitely made his presence felt in the lineup and has truly emerged as not only maybe the best outfielder in all of baseball, but really a guy that can carry an offense when other guys like Heyward and Freeman, who's been out with injury, and B.J. Upton have found some struggles at the plate. So the Braves, all of that's clicking. But the biggest thing with the Braves, though, as far as the offense has been good, the pitching, while we knew what with Venters and obviously Kay Kimbrel, who I called the best pitcher in the National League in the preseason, I knew that the bullpen would be very strong. I thought if he got to the seventh or eighth inning with the lead, the Braves are going to shut down the game more times than not. The starting pitching has been really impressive, even by Atlanta standards. Paul Mahalam still has not given up an earned run all season. Mike Minor, Commodore Pride once again. Outstanding first few starts. Tim Hudson getting towards his 200th career win. This may be the best he's pitched as a Brave. And I know it's two, three starts into the season, But, I mean, Hudson's been around a few years now, and it's probably the best he's pitched as a Brave. Going back, it's maybe even better than his Oakland days. He just has the maturity and just knows where to place his pitches. So the Braves are off to an outstanding start, doing really well. A team that's not doing so well are the Anaheim Angels, where I knew that Josh Hamilton, he actually hit some home runs this past week. I knew he had some troubles adjusting, and he's a slow starter. With Trout having some struggles as well in Albert Pujols, I knew that the offense may be a deterrent and a struggle for the Angels, but it's a starting pitching that I'm really concerned about. And biggest thing with Jared Weaver being out for a month with injury, you're really starting to see the Angels exposed as far as where they're going to struggle offensively. And that's why I actually chose the Rangers to win the division, or at least contend to be right there with the Angels, even despite the Angels' acquisitions. But the starting pitching has not been very good for them. And especially with C.J. Wilson, you think that this would be a time for him to step up and become a major player. He's not there. Erwin Santana, who gave him some good years, he is on the Royals right now. The Angels really have some major concerns with the pitching staff overall. When I told y'all last time when I was doing my baseball reviews for my Beanball, which is this segment is called, I was going to do a State of the Mets every single time. It was kind of a goof because I know a lot of people talk about the Mets, but down here there's not much love for New York, and I knew that they would have a rough year. But right now, they are off to a really good start, 7-4 right now. My favorite pitcher growing up was Dwight Gooden. Matter of fact, if I go through my archives, probably my most prized picture is me with Dwight Gooden, probably back in 1986 or 87, when my school went to Shea Stadium, and that was my favorite player. I didn't really do the poster thing or have the, like, who's your sports idol? I mean, I like Lawrence Taylor and a bunch of other guys, just I respected him. But Dr. K, Dwight Gooden, that was my boy. That was my man. And ever since his rise and unfortunate struggles and fall with the Mets, New York fans have been looking for that one pitcher who can take the mantle of being the ace and a major starter or homegrown player for the Mets. I don't want to put Matt Harvey in that category because Gooden arguably had the best rookie year by a pitcher in history. But so far, if you look at Matt Harvey through three starts, he is the first pitcher in Major League history with three wins, 25 strikeouts, and giving up only six hits. And he's 24 years old. Lord willing, for his sake, Mets fans, and really all of baseball, if he keeps this up, he's not going to keep this up, but if his arm stays right, you may finally have that centerpiece for the Mets that's going to really carry the team towards the future. He's been outstanding. John Buck, there were jokes among my fellow KSU people that, you know, John Buck, maybe something is involved with him with this power surge. I'm not complaining. I know he's 32 years old, but he's hitting .317 with six home runs, 19 RBIs. I don't know if that's going to last, especially him being a catcher, but I'm taking as much as I can right now as a fan. Daniel Murphy is hitting for some outstanding numbers as well. As I said, I always, with the Mets, I picked them to finish, I think I may have picked them to finish last in the division. Definitely, maybe only ahead of the Marlins, who have become a complete disaster down in Florida. If all of you out there watched that Outside the Lines piece on the Jeffrey Loria, the owner, and the Marlins and the state of baseball in Miami, that's a terrible situation. And just off on a tangent on this, I didn't understand how Bud Selig allowed that to even happen in the first place. Loria, he screwed over the Montreal Expos, pretty much bought the team, gutted the roster, and ended up selling it to Washington, really, Major League Baseball had to come in and intervene, and the Expos ended up becoming the Nationals and all that stuff. So you knew he was a crappy owner to start off with. And yet you let him buy another team. And then all the details in the Marlins, how they pretty much fleeced the fans and the taxpayers in Miami to build that stadium. And then he gutted the roster again. Really deplorable situation for all of Major League Baseball and Bud Selig. And watching the Braves actually played some games down there earlier this season, and just seeing the lack of people in the stands and the deplorable lineup that's being presented by the Marlins, it's just a really shady situation overall. But back to the Mets, I think I picked the Mets. The only team they'd be better in the National League East would have been the Marlins. And while the Phillies have actually shown some moments of life, I'm just happy the Mets are respectable and not a complete embarrassment to all of Major League Baseball. So good things for the Mets. The Carlos Quinton and Zach Greinke fight, I kind of understand both sides of it. Quinton has been hit by Greinke, well, three times prior to the incident this past week. So he's been hit four times by Greinke. So obviously his emotions are high. There's a history between the two. Greinke, I don't think, was trying to hit him. Obviously a 3-2 count, one-run game, that's not the time that you're going to hit somebody. But I understand the emotions of being frustrated with getting hit multiple times by a pitcher. My blame, honestly, kind of goes to Greinke. When you're a pitcher, and if I was a manager, and I saw an opponent charging my pitcher, I would tell the pitcher, it's not going to look soft. You're going to be called a lot of negative names. You're going to be called soft and weak. But I would just fall to the ground, get into a fetal position, and get into a ball. Now, I know that's not the manliest thing, and we've grown up with the image of Nolan Ryan getting Robin Ventura in a neck hold or a choke hold and punching him and everything like that. And respect to Nolan Ryan, one of the all-timers and maybe one of the toughest guys in history of baseball, respect to him for that. But not everyone is like that. Personally, as I said, if I was pitching and someone was charging me, I would get into a ball because you are messing with your livelihood. And Greinke, he tried to pull like a form tackle, like he was starting for USC or something, and ended up breaking his collarbone, and he's out multiple months. Carlos Quinton, he's going to serve his 8-game suspension or whatever it ends up being after the appeals and everything like that. He's going to be back hitting by the end of the month. Greinke, his livelihood is tarnished. Well, not tarnished forever, but I mean, it's a major collarbone injury and you're a pitcher. That could be career threatening. So I don't understand why he did that. And then another thing, as far as the Dodgers go, if you're the catcher, you got to get in between the hitter and the pitcher. You got the equipment on. You can't let him charge. You saw the look, his body language, that he was going to approach your pitcher. You got to grab onto him and maybe even tackle him before it happens and you take the suspension. Because Greinke is the second most valuable pitcher on that team, and you cannot have that happen if you have postseason aspirations. So we'll see how that all falls into place. So while the Dodgers and the Angels have struggled, as far as the SoCal teams and NorCal teams are doing outstanding, Oakland's 9-4 and the Giants are 9-4. Expected the Giants to win a division, defending World Series champs. When you have that much pitching and that much clutch hitting, you're going to win your fair share of games. Oakland, I'm still surprised by. I think they picked them to finish third in the NL or the AL West, excuse me. And Spencer made fun of me, and he actually picked Melvin to not only win the AL Manager of the Year, but actually picked the A's to make the playoffs, and I laughed at him. But they had a 9-game winning streak. They ended up losing 2 or 3 at home to Detroit this past weekend. But Oakland is definitely a major player, and you have to give them respect with the Coco Crisp and some of the other players. So my eye is on Oakland. I'm intrigued by them. I don't know if they can keep it up for the rest of the season, but respect to them overall. The team I picked to finish last in the AL East is actually in first place right now, the Boston Red Sox. The reason I picked them to not only in first place, but finish last, I didn't like the pitching. And obviously John Lackey, he already suffered his injury. That's like clockwork. Even when he comes back from Tommy John, now he strained the bicep or hurt his arm. That was expected. But if John Lester and Clay Buchholz could keep this pace up, pitching at a Cy Young level, the Red Sox are going to be heard from in that division. And that division right now looks as wide open as ever. I picked Baltimore to win the division, but they had their struggles in New York this weekend. Yankees, they're lurking around at 500. The Blue Jays, Dickey looked much better He actually pitched well against Kansas City this past weekend, but the Blue Jays I don't even know about, and Jose Reyes out 3 months with an ankle injury. All you New York fans already know the deal with Jose Reyes and his litany of leg injuries. So if he's not back in the lineup, that just caused a complete mess for that entire roster. The AL East is a potentially wide open division, and I don't see why the Red Sox can't go and win that. Napoli's given them some power production at first base. I like Bradley Jr. Playing outfield. I'm glad they let him actually start the season in the big leagues and then make him do his service time down in the minor leagues. He's up there. He brings a lot of hope. Pedroia, still a solid player. Ortiz, you know, is going to give you some good numbers. Red Sox are right there, possibly winning the division, which I did not see coming into form. And the biggest reason is the starting pitching. So those are my Major League Baseball thoughts on what's happened over the past week or so. And now we are going to end the show with what's ruffling my feathers. So today is April 15th, and you know what that means, everybody. It is tax season. Taxes are always a fun thing to do when you're a grown-up and making your steps towards manhood or womanhood. I took care of mine this weekend, did all of my forms, and got my W-2s and itemized everything and stuff like that. Uncle Sam, once again, undefeated. Uncle Sam gets his money, does what he wants to do. Probably the only thing in the world that are death and taxes are guaranteed. Another guarantee is Uncle Sam is going to get his. But I'm not complaining about it because as a United States citizen and as a Georgia resident, there are certain things that you have to do and certain steps you have to take to guarantee your rights as a citizen. While I may pay a certain amount or not get as much of a refund or whatever my financial status is, the last thing I'm going to do is look at the man next to me and complain about the taxes he is or isn't paying. Everyone is in their own group in their own realities. For me to talk about another man's money is disrespectful. The two things you don't do in life are talk about another man's money and talk about another man's partner. And when I say partner, I mean relationship partner. And three, you don't talk about their children or family. So three things you don't do. You don't talk about money. You don't talk about their boyfriend or girlfriend. And they don't talk about their children or their family. So those are things you do not do. So I'm waking up early this morning, had to run some errands, take care of some personal family business. I, for some reason, on the TV was Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough. And it's just your general political morning show, just talking about the news and notes from everything that's going on. For some reason, Scarborough and his fellow guest host or panelists were discussing the tax rate and the taxes that President Obama was paying. And they were complaining about his tax rate is at X amount of percent, and while since they make a certain amount of money, theirs is a little bit more. The point is, I'm not going to get into specifics of what the numbers are and what the percentages are. You can look up a website and see what tax bracket everyone is in and everything like that. My thoughts on that are, why do you care what he is paying in his taxes? He's a government official. You can see all the money that he's made as far as what he's earned as a government official. Whatever that is, his certain percentages, his ownerships, the cars that he owns or land, that's his business. I thought that it was a pretty low blow that you're going to pick the day that all of us are paying our taxes and some of us are maybe happier than others of how much we owe or don't owe, that you're going to pick on the most known man arguably in the world and talk about his money and how much he is paying. Do we want millionaires to pay a little bit more of their taxes? I don't know. Yes or no. You can make arguments for both cases. But there are advantages and disadvantages for everybody in every situation. I'm single. I do not own a home. I don't get those benefits. There are people out there that have multiple children, own multiple properties, and they get some advantages. As of me being single, I get a little bit of a break as an individual. I think all of us have our own little ways that we can cut a break. I could have made multiple donations to charities and gotten some tax credits and everything like that. I may have not done as much of those as others, but I'm not going to complain that, oh man, they got a tax break because they did this or that. Once again, that's just talking about another person's money. And furthermore, we should be fortunate to pay taxes. And that's the last point I'm going to make about what's ruffling my feathers. For all the people that are making 6 and 7 figures of their income and saying that pay X amount, you're not starving. You're not poor. You're not going to be homeless and not worry about your next meal. If you have to pay 30, 40, 50% of your taxes, I'll put it this way. 50% of a million is a lot more than 10% of 10,000. And there are people out there right now who may not make a lot of money and pay the quote-unquote less percentages of taxes, but they literally are worrying about how they're going to afford to stay in their home next month or how they're going to pay for their gas. And while that may be a liberal or democratic view of things, that's just the reality of the situation. And on the other end of things, to make it fair and to be bipartisan, all of you that are making less money and angry that, oh, the guy who makes $3 million only pays like, you know, maybe X amount of percentage, they earned that money. They went out, earned that money in whatever form, and even if they inherited it or invested it, whatever. You cannot show hate or throw some shade on someone from being financially successful. So the point being of what's ruffling my feathers and bringing it back to full circle with Morning Joe, I think all of us, while we're filling out our forms and taking care of our business, stop looking over the other person's shoulder and seeing what they're doing. Worry about yourself and all will be okay in the bracket of your life. All right, thank you once again for listening to this edition of the Sports Inquirer podcast. Thank you to all you new listeners out there. Once again, if you want to go to the website, go to thesportsinquirer.net. We always have updates and archived podcasts from the previous few weeks. Also on Twitter, under Sports Inquirer, I'll have news and notes in the world of sports, and I do a lot of live tweeting for major events, so looking forward to that over the next few weeks. Also send us an email at mportute@gmail.com or at sportsinquirer@gmail.com. The next show is going to be recorded on Wednesday. I'm going to give out my NBA awards, talk about some NHL news and notes, and then I'm going to maybe touch on safety in sports arenas, obviously with the events that took place in Boston today. Maybe need to have some analysis of what's going on there. There'll be the right time to do it after more news comes out from there. So, once again, thank you for listening. Tell your friends and family about the show. I am one click away. Until then, good fight. Good night.